Hey guys, before the podcast starts, we have something we would like to tell you.
It's very exciting. Next month, October 25th in San Francisco. If you're around, join us. We're doing our first ever stage show.
Yes, it is Tested the Show.
Tested colon the show.
Yes.
We're doing a week of Tested live on stage at the Castro Theater.
It's like we're cramming a full week of Tested into one afternoon of live performance on stage at the Castro. It's not a week-long performance.
No. We're not going to be there every day. It's like 2.5 hours, maybe.
Yeah.
We're going to have... You're going to be there. You're going to do an episode of The Talking Room live on stage.
The Talking Room. Jamie's going to do something.
He's going to show something cool.
It's going to be pretty cool, though.
Norm and I are going to defuse a bomb live on stage, like an actual... real bomb. Don't tell anybody.
A special guest.
Theater people don't know.
Surprises that you haven't seen before. But tickets are on sale now.
They are.
Yeah.
You can go to testedlive.eventbrite.com or just go to the Tested website. We'll have a big link there. They're not expensive.
It's on the top of the page.
And it'll be at the Castro Theater, so it's a beautiful venue.
Beautiful Castro Theater.
I think VIP tickets are already sold out, but we're going to have a Tested meetup for members, Tested members, after the event.
Yep.
Just take over a local bar and have beers and chat for a little bit. And
if you can't make it, it's okay, because we're filming everything, and it will be on.
But we're not going to show that immediately.
No. It'll be a couple weeks. Yeah. So
it's not going to be live stream.
If you want the benefit, you got to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. It's Tested the Show. Now on to the regular podcast where we spoil the hell out of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Woohoo!
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
I like to give enough of a pause there that people are expecting. They're excited about it when we
honestly,
come in.
Honestly, the length of that pause made your speaking feel like a pebble dropped in a quiet lake.
I was hoping for a sense of quiet release. From the tension that was building in the otherwise quiet room.
You absolutely, I'd say both could be descriptions of the same thing. Maggie, my little wire terrier rescue dog, is begging for some attention here. I'm actually going
to be
speaking at the ASPCA's donor dinner.
Oh, awesome.
For their gold level donors, anyone who donates more than $1,000, I'm giving a 10-minute talk tomorrow night.
This is in San Francisco.
At the ASPCA.
So it's actually last Wednesday night.
This will happen. Yeah,
this will be in the past.
But I'm still not quite positive what I'm going to say.
Okay.
And this is frequent with me and talks, right? I tend to leave these things until late, and I gestate. I think about them for a long time, and then I write them down a few hours before the talk. Many times I do that. And with this one, I'm not really sure what to do, because if these are people that have given between $1 and $10,000 to the ASPCA, they agree with me wholeheartedly that everyone should go get rescue dogs and please have your dog neutered or spayed. And that there's way too many, there's way more dogs out there who need homes and love than there are homes and love. And so please stop adding to it by getting, you know, purebred dogs and go get a rescue dog.
Or if you want a purebred dog, there's purebred rescues for all breeds.
Yes.
Like if you want a golden retriever, you can go get a golden retriever at the golden retriever rescue.
And
I assure you there is one of those.
Want a greyhound? Go get a former racer greyhound. Oh. They are the sweetest dogs alive. I mean, they're dumb as a box of hair, but they are super sweet natured.
And greyhounds are awesome because to exercise them, you just take a ball out to the park, throw it 3 times. And they're like, well, I'm done. I'll see you at 10 o'clock tonight.
That's all I can do. Run at 80 miles an hour for a minute.
So you'll be preaching to the choir. And you want to give
some, right
and
just talking
what,
about
what, what's their expectation
right so I'm not exactly sure what to say. I mean, obviously I feel like I should tell the story of our rescue dogs, mm-hmm. right? Because I never had a dog growing up. Huxley, our bigger dog, is the first dog I've ever had. And
well, you guys did good.
Yeah, we killed.
Yeah.
That's from Berkeley Humane. And it really was instant love at first sight upon seeing him. And ever since, I mean, the worst part about a dog is it is a lesson in impermanence, right? We're going to outlive him by a long way. And that is the saddest thing in the world because he has brought so much amazing affection into our lives.
Cool.
And then Maggie, a couple of years later. So I think I'll tell the story about wanting to get a dog. They only want me to speak for about 10 minutes. Mm. That'll take like 6 minutes to do that. And maybe I'll find some more to discuss within that about my father's allergies to animals and the fact that we never only had cats and cats are dicks.
They're bad.
You got to end strong.
They could be cat people at the ASPCA though. You got to be careful.
Look, here's the thing I think about cats is you can love cats, but you still have to agree they're dicks.
Yeah, there's not.
Okay. Yes. Well, the difference is the cat needs you to love them, and the dog needs to love you.
No, the difference is the cat needs nothing from you.
As far as my concern, cat needs to show you its asshole at least twice a day.
Yeah, we always had cats with long hair, so no assholes. That's my only rule for pets.
And shoot lasers from their eyes.
Because I don't want to see assholes exposed.
I have an amazing cat asshole story.
Oh no.
So it's like the early 90s. I'm living in San Francisco, and my roommate has done shrooms.
Okay, that's a thing that happens.
Yes, I think it was LSD. He had dropped LSD.
Less vomiting, but okay.
This required some management from me, right?
Because you were a much better roommate than I was.
So his back went out. Okay. And he had back problems. So we went and I found in our medicine cabinet a heating pad. Oh. Right. And so I brought it to him and he goes, oh, the hot and moist pad. You found the hot and moist pad, because it's literally called the hot and moist pad. And it's meant to have the outer layer wet so that it
conducts better.
Yeah. It conducts better, I guess. So I heat it up. I plug it in. I wet it. Not necessarily in this order. And then I put it under his neck and it's awesome. Oh, he's feeling really good. Okay, cool. He's calming down. But now the cat, he gets up to have a glass of water. And when he turns back around, the cat has got its paws. The cat has got the heat and hot and wet moist pad. And it's like literally hugging it with all four of its limbs and licking it. Like,
oh,
it must feel like mom's belly or something. This cat is like, this is the greatest thing I've ever experienced. Right. So we're like, what do? We try and push the cat. The cat's like, nope, I'm not moving. So finally the two of us, and he's on psychedelics. So he's somewhat diminished capacity.
A good time.
We managed to pry the cat off the hot and moist pad. And my friend lies down. My roommate lies back down on the hot and moist pad. Now he's getting, but the cat wants it back in. So the cat kind of nuzzles his face. And when that doesn't work, the cat turns around and puts its butthole right up to my roommate's eye. And he basically like opens his eyes and looks like, oh, and as he moves his head away, the cat clamps back on the hot and moist pad. It was like it knew. So if you ever wonder whether cats know that they're showing you their butt, they totally know.
Oh yeah.
It's a complete total diss. The cat did that three more times. Because he was tripping and didn't realize that this was a problem. And I just thought it was hilarious. So I'm laughing my ass off. Cat did that three more times before it was clear we had to lock the cat out of the room because it was just going to keep doing that.
Oh, my God.
So monkeys aren't the only ones that use tools.
The thing is, when you get an eyeball of the dog's ass, it's just because the dog is trying to get in a more comfortable position and is unaware of the social aspects of, you know, baring its nethers.
It's starfish.
Yes. Winking. Just.
That's a Vonnegut. Vonnegut always draws the
starfish. The starfish. That was Breakfast of Champions. That page was they redacted that page in my high school library.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes. Line drawings of female genitalia and the starfish.
Wait, was there a line drawing of female genitalia?
I think
genitalia
it was Breakfast of Champions. It might have been Cat's Cradle or something else. But anyway, there's a high school library in Northeast Tennessee. Redacted. I was like, man, why
is this behind here? Oh, this is awesome.
See it from the other side. I don't remember what we were going to talk about at this point.
You're talking about the ASPCA.
I was talking about the
doing
ASPCA.
A talk there.
Yes.
It's something. Is this, are they filming this or this?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, let us know how it goes.
You should just give I don't think you have to be on topic. You don't have to, talk about dogs.
I love talking about dogs. I love talking about dogs.
You could talk about raccoons, enemy of the dog.
Are they?
Well, we have raccoons in our neighborhood that have to weigh at least 40 pounds. They're enormous.
Oh, yeah, no. And they live in the storm sewers. Native raccoons are badass. They're like Hell's Angels of the animal kingdom.
I came out of my kitchen door. There's a tree like 8 feet away that kind of shades the whole side deck. And I went out one night to put something in the recycling bin. I heard, and I thought, oh, shit, it's a cat. And I looked up and all I see is six sets of eyes and some little ring tails dangling out of the tree. I'm like, they could jump down on me and kill me right now.
Yeah, they have opposable thumbs, man. You got to look out.
They're scary.
Here's your segue. Let's talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's why I said raccoons.
Well done.
I gave you the easy end.
Norm is.
That's it. We were going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. How about that Vin Diesel? You guys seen Fast and the Furious 6? We've all seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
It was contrary to what I said right before you left for Australia. They did actually open worldwide and you were able to see it while you were gone.
I was. We saw it. We had a kind of an experience going to see it because what I did was I handed the task of booking us tickets to Thing 2. I said, hey, we want to see go see Guardians of the Galaxy. We're in
Australia.
Yeah, but we were in Melbourne.
Okay.
And we wanted to go see it. And I said, I've looked it up. It's playing a block from here at this theater called Blah at 8 o'clock. So book us tickets for the 8 o'clock show. He comes back 10 minutes later and he says, I bought some tickets. There were no theaters nearby, but there was a 9:30 showing. So I bought 4 tickets to that. And I said, okay, this is a problem because I'm old and I want to go to sleep. And 9:30 is too late. So let's get the money back for the tickets. Can't. We've already bought them.
Yeah.
So then I say, wait, how does this work? Oh,
well, it's because he took his phone away. No, so he didn't have Fandango.
No, he had his phone. He had a laptop. I said, look, it's called this. This is the theater. Go. I sent him the link. Here's the theater. It's got an 8 o'clock showing. There's seats available. Book it. So he comes back and he says, I booked it for the 8 o'clock show. We're good. So 7:30. No, the theater's like 2 blocks away. 7:30 rolls around. I'm like, so do we need to print those tickets out or we can just go to Will Call? He goes, let me check. Oh, Dad, I've messed up. I didn't buy the tickets to that theater. I bought it to a theater that's 45 minutes away.
Oh, no. So hold on. So now we're 2 sets of tickets in. And those, I'm sure you are unrefundable as well.
This is the most expensive movie I've ever seen.
This is why you don't get an agency.
Hold on. How much is a movie ticket in Australia?
Let's see.
Do you remember?
This is obscene. We ended up spending, it was like $18 or something like that.
Still cheaper than here.
Well, no, $18. We ended up paying for the 4 of us to go see this movie. I was going to say stupid movie, but it wasn't a stupid movie. That's movie. We're see the stupid movie. It was like we ended up spending like $190.
Oh no!
Absolutely ridiculous.
I want to see the movie with the raccoon. Damn it!
But I wasn't gonna back down. I want to see the movie.
Yeah.
Like so we got non-refundable tickets. I don't care. We're gonna walk to the theater. We're gonna buy the tickets, so, and we did.
What you're saying is the path you walked to get to this point. has been a challenge. Fraught with peril. Mistakes were made.
It took so long to get to this movie. Reese Witherspoon is starring in the movie version of my trip to see Guardians of the Galaxy.
So the good news is, now all that expense, you can write it off.
Right. That's true. It's deductible.
Right. I can't. And we're going to live stream the conversation with the accountant, too. So yeah, that'll be good.
I'm not so sure about that. I'll have to ask him. Anyway, Guardians was fantastic.
I didn't have any familiarity with the
neither
franchise.
Did I.
Other than it's the one with the tree and the raccoon. I'm not. That's got to be dumb as hell.
Right. And I thought that when I saw the trailer, tree and raccoon, mostly raccoon.
The trailer was really good.
The trailer was really good, but I had real reservations. And the first thing that I'm going to say about Guardians is I was shocked at the degree to which I fell in love with Rocket Raccoon as a character. I actually think he's the most rounded character in the film.
Well, he's the one that grows the most, for sure.
And I absolutely loved him.
Bradley Cooper did a fantastic job.
Never would have known it was Bradley Cooper if I didn't know it was Bradley Cooper.
And I loved, and the connection between him and Groot, everything about his characterization was subtle and lovely and also bold and, you know, hit you over the head, but really, I was very involved.
And he was animated so well that within 2 seconds of his first appearance on screen, probably, I had forgotten that he was animated.
Yeah.
I was like, this is the best raccoon actor I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The great thing in terms of the performances is everyone, in terms of the heroes, everyone is a revelation. Because Chris Pratt, you never seen him at that point do this kind of leading star role.
Right.
We knew he'd do the comedy.
Yeah. Isn't it funny, the obligatory shirt off scene?
Which they kept for him, and then they did not use, smartly so, for Gamora. For Zoe Saldana, which they had in the trailer.
Oh, they did.
They had it in the trailer, but they didn't use it in the movie. They cut it out, which thank goodness, because I think...
You're being bathed before you're...
Or, yeah, or like she's putting on clothes or something.
Yeah.
I thought she was the weakest.
Oh, no.
Well, I thought she was fun. I mean, if you're going to say weakest, I think every performance in the film is very strong. I think the characterizations were great. I heard that Stan Lee was originally supposed to play the Collector, who was played by Benicio del Toro.
Wow, that's interesting.
I don't think that.
I'm really glad, because Benicio del Toro made that role very creepy and upsetting, and I thought that's what it required.
I assume the Collector will show up in the future installments of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Especially given the, should we say, the big spoiler at the end of the...
Oh, hey, by the way, is this a spoiler cast?
Yes,
of course it's a spoiler cast.
It was in the title when you clicked on it.
So we gave you the segue. Now, if you don't want to hear about Guardians of the Galaxy, A, you should have gone to see it already, because like a million and a half people have or something.
Yes.
And B, from this point on, all bets are off.
All bets are off. I was really surprised. Not surprised how much I liked it, but so pleasantly surprised. Everything that's happening in the Marvel Universe is awesome.
And really, you know what sucks about the DC, the Warner Brothers is struggling. They're scrambling.
Yeah.
And they have Superman, which made a lot of money.
They're doing Zack Snyder's Batman versus Superman.
Yes. And it's all built. They want to have their big tentpole lead up to their Justice League. And now they're saying that their strategy to be anti-Marvel, or the strategy to counter the Marvel Studios is to make serious movies. Is to make sure their superhero movies are gritty and serious.
I mean, that's worked for them. That worked for them with Batman.
It did.
I think the big reasons the Marvel movies do so well is because they're fun.
Well, and look, I mean, there's space for both. Oh, sorry. I'm talking through a dog.
It's okay.
Sorry, Maggie. I love you, but I'll love you more later. There's space for both. I love the grittiness of Batman. I'll tell you what I'd love DC to take on would be Batman Year One, which I was just reading was, I was reading who the directors were that were developing Batman Year One years ago, and it made me really sad because that's one of my favorite comic books of all time.
It's Aronofsky and...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read Batman Year One, Frank Miller's Batman origin story, it's phenomenal. It's both his and Commissioner Gordon's origin story.
I felt like they pulled some stuff from that for Batman Begins.
They certainly did.
Like, clearly lifted all the Carmine Falcone and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They totally did. I mean, it's all part of the canon, but I just think the pacing of learning what a badass Commissioner Gordon is.
Or so learning how cynical a city is and how you have to live, how you have to...
Right.
And it's of a time, you know, before technology and gadgets.
Right.
It's the roots of Batman where you're just a vigilante.
Yeah.
And you can do that.
He's just a good boxer, good fighter.
There's a great bit where in Year One where he's about to fight Flass, the bad cop. He says, it's been a long time since I've fought a Green Beret. I throw him a bat to even the odds.
Right. Commissioner Gordon says.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Guardians.
So... The movie was much funnier than I expected. Like it was less of a superhero movie and more, it's kind of what I would want a Han Solo movie to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like less kind of cynical and gritty than you'd expect a, you know, pre episode 4 Han Solo movie to be.
But it was also clear, like when you had comic relief, like Michael Rooker is the blue guy.
What's his name? Drax.
No. Michael Rooker is the guy who takes in, he's the Ravager who takes in Chris Pratt.
Oh, he's the
right.
surrogate father.
Yes.
Who might eat him.
He is both comedy relief and scary.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
And you realize that he has a lot of threat, and then they pay off that threat in such a delightful way with the whistling sword knife thing.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. And the movie is full of ridiculous things. A talking raccoon, a whistling needle.
What's a raccoon?
And they play off so well in the writing because it is a fantastical universe.
It's Isaac Asimov's magic, right? It's sufficiently advanced technology.
Well, so here's the thing that I'm interested in is I know that Joss Whedon is in charge of the whole Marvel universe.
Phase two.
Right.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige, producer of Joss Whedon. Yes.
So what I'm interested in is, like, I feel like there is a tremendous amount of unity across the board in terms of the enjoyment factor I get out of Winter Soldier and Avengers and Guardians.
And every movie plays a specific role in what you're supposed to get thematically out of that universe so that all builds up to their every once every 4 years tentpole that makes $1 billion or, you know, 100 million opening weekend.
So I, you know, obviously the thing I'm always most interested in talking about on the Talking Room is how do you run a giant creative endeavor with integrity?
So that's Kevin Feige, who I mean, when you look about the super, you talk about superhero movies and Marvel, before Marvel Studios existed, the first big superhero movie that brought in the early thousands was Spider-Man.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was 2002,
yeah.
And Avi Arad was the big producer. Well,
X-Men was before that, though.
Yeah, so it made $50 million opening weekend, but Spider-Man made $116.
Okay.
And that's what broke through the...
Nice facts on the top of your head.
The consciousness.
This is what Norm's here for.
I'm
impressed.
For studios back then, I mean, there was no one unified structure. You had producers who championed their projects, directors who had their vision, and... But Kevin Feige of Marvel is the guy who has had the vision since Iron Man, the first Iron Man with Jon Favreau. And you credit both those guys for being fans who had the foresight to seed in the things, then to explore and tap into rich tapestry of characters.
But I thought that the Great Avengers Initiative, not the one in the movie, but the thing that resulted in Thor and Captain America and then Avengers, and then I thought that was all a result of the massive success of Iron Man. I thought the massive success of Iron Man made this what seemed like at the time an insane multi-year.
Well, and Iron Man was the slow burner. The studio didn't think it was a low.
Oh yeah, Iron Man
low
was
budget
supposed
by
to be
standards
the
of
low run Batman.
Right.
When they first pitched Iron Man before Jon Favreau was involved, the studio pitch was a billionaire who at night fights crime in a suit of armor, which is Batman.
Right.
Yeah.
And then once Jon Favreau got in and got Robert Downey Jr. involved, then they said let's take a risk and stay true to the comics.
Yeah.
And bring in Robert Downey Jr.'s personality list and hope that sells it.
And it made 92
million's opening weekend.
Yeah.
And then Iron Man
is so good. The first Iron Man is such a masterpiece.
But it's also respect to the writers.
Right.
Because there is a cabal of these Marvel Comics writers. If the stinger scene at the end of the first Iron Man, the stinger that we all expect at the end of these Marvel superhero movies, that wasn't written by the screenwriter of Iron Man.
What was that stinger?
The stinger was Nick Fury, Sam Jackson walking up and saying, and says literally, "Who are you?" He goes, I'm Nick Fury. You're now entering a world. He says, literally, you're entering a new world of possibility or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, and I want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
And then cold chills.
And it was, and those four lines and that light exchange, which no one knew, even the press didn't know anything about until the release.
An incredible vision for doing that.
That was written by comic book writers who were brought in by the studio, who, because they've been writing these comics for decades, they suggested, how about let's bring in this and let's bring in this line and condense it in these four lines to lay the foundation.
It's brilliant. It's really, really, I mean, they're hitting on all the cylinders. So back to Guardians.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard for me to reconstruct the plot in my head because the movie goes so far and wide, but it's basically a prison break plus a couple of rescues.
There's a cold open where you find out that he's an orphan.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is a great cold open.
Right. Space Jesus, perhaps. And then you see him 20 years later.
Right.
He steals the
Indiana Jones moment.
Right. He steals the orb
immediately.
Yeah.
It's the type of, Indiana Jones and Han Solo type character you're going to expect. And that opening title sequence where he's singing and with the headphones on and dancing and picks up the creatures and then bam, Guardians of the Galaxy. That sets the tone right there.
Totally does. I mean, and it's the perfect mix of camp and...
It's really well balanced because you could have gone a tiny bit in either direction. It would have been
and
a disaster.
You lose that,
The prison break scene was a moment where I was in a theater full of people 2 weeks after it came out, maybe.
Yeah.
And literally, I thought people were going to stand up and cheer. It has such a delightful pacing all the way through the checking into you. Like the contrast between the normal, hey, you're going into prison and you're a human on an Earth-ass Earth prison, And then all the bits about the callback to the Walkman, the guy stealing the Walkman, the leg joke, the Rocket Raccoon leg joke is the moment that you realize what a monstrous asshole Rocket Raccoon is.
And then Drex, his literal taking, you know, what is that? What is this? What is this line? Why would you cut your finger across?
Actually, so frankly, Drax's line.
Nothing goes over my head.
You can't use analogy with him. It'll go over his head. Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too quick. I would just grab it.
And the way he delivers
It's so good. I was like, wow, it's like three levels to that. It's so fucking brilliant. Oh my God. I wanted to pause the movie just to enjoy that moment for an extra like 40 seconds.
And the fact they got it, you know, they could have got The Rock. They could have got any well-known big dude. They got an unknown.
He did. What's his name?
Dave. Bautista. Yeah.
He's been in other stuff.
He's fantastic. He's really, really lovely. And it's terrific, terrific characterization. And you really liked how wooden he is and how inaccessible, except when he talks, you know, oh, it's true. Oh, I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, well, that stuff. One of the things I've loved about these movies, too, is that they don't, because the video game tie-ins for these movies have been terrible. Like, if you look at some of the stuff from the early 2000s, mid-2000s, people were putting scenes in movies, I think, exclusively so that they'd have a bit in the video game that they could then say, oh, this is just like, look, we're playing the movie.
Yeah.
And some of those, like, it doesn't really have that. Like, it doesn't have, there's nothing there that doesn't need to be there to move the story forward, move the plot forward, move the characters forward. And they did a really lovely job making smart, well, multiple levels of jokes. There's plenty of real dumb jokes in that movie.
Totally. But a lot of them are on a Bugs Bunny level. Depending on how old you are, it'll mean a different thing to you.
He's a wrestler.
I particularly loved, I've spent my life hiding among my enemies. I'd be honored to die among my friends. Or however she puts that. Zoe Saldana says that.
Okay.
Gamora says that. And I was like, I'm a little mad I haven't heard that line before. It's a great line. Of course, it's a beautiful, this is where the movie kicks into act three moment.
And then Nebula from Doctor Who, Karen.
She plays Amy Pond, right?
Yes.
Karen.
Gamora's.
Is the sister.
The blue Gamora.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. And she's from Doctor Who, the redhead.
Oh, wow.
She's the assistant. Companion.
Yeah, the companion.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's a revelation. Really was very scary.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely terrifying.
When they're talking to Josh Brolin, Thanos, and she's like, yes, dad. And it was great.
Oh, that's Brolin. Sorry, I didn't realize
that's Josh Brolin, because he's playing the villain in Avengers 3. I thought that was
Ultron.
In Avengers 2, it's Ultron, James Spader. Avengers 3, it'll be Josh Brolin. Laying the seeds again.
I'm so glad we have you here.
Lee Pace as a villain, as the Ronin. I mean, a little bit of a black and white villain.
Who's Lee Pace?
He's in, you see the TV show Pushing Daisies? Yeah. Also, he's in the new Hobbit movie, the last Hobbit movie. He plays the lead elf.
Right.
He plays a...
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, with the crown.
The Mirkwood elves?
Yeah,
no, the woodland.
He was in Pushing Daisies. He was in The Fall. But great makeup.
Also, yeah, really good. Really, I also liked John C. Reilly and Peter Serafinowicz.
I hope we see more John C. Reilly in the now inevitable sequel.
When they're asking, but what if I really want the thing that the guy's got? Can I just take it? No, that's still a crime.
Still stealing. the sky space fight at the end was something like they did something really well with that that you haven't really seen since like Return of the Jedi. I think about
an epic battle where you really still feel like you understand what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. Like if you look at so the exception probably is the episode 3 at the beginning, at the space battle when Darth, when Anakin and Obi-Wan are flying in toward Grievous's ship. That is totally comprehensible. It's super simple. Though.
Right.
It's
beautifully done.
Yeah. And there's multiple things going on at the same time. You're cutting back and forth between two or three different activities at the same time. You feel like all of the throwaway characters are actually real characters, you know, the ones that are exploding constantly. And The big net thing is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, but it was really pretty.
The big which?
The big net that the defending ships make.
Yeah.
To like push it up. You're like, this is so dumb. So dumb.
Really? That's your plan?
Yeah. We all joined together. It's like the last Starfighter. Oh, okay. That worked for them, right? Yeah, I really liked it so much that I snuck out one night after the baby had gone to bed and I was like, hey, I'm gonna go see a movie. I'll see you in 2 hours. She's like, I'm gonna be asleep. And sent her I was like, Ginny, you gotta go on Saturday morning. I'll Eleanor, baby and I'll go noodle around.
Yeah.
And you go watch this movie. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah. The ensemble, you know, you find yourself wondering after seeing the trailer when you're in the film, how are these guys gonna start to work together? They're setting it up as very, very opposed to each other all over the place, and yet it ends up being a very natural progression.
I mean, that's a wonderful point, because the first time they meet each other on the planet of Glenn Close, they're literally all trying to kill each other.
Right.
Well, Chris Pratt's not trying to kill anybody, but everybody else is trying to kill Chris Pratt.
Also, I think that I thought that there were times, and it's hard to say with film, but there were times when Chris Pratt's joke delivery seemed to me just ever so slightly off.
You think so?
Well, I just think that there were, I don't have specific examples. I'll have to watch the film again. But at the same time, that kind of worked for his character, for his characterization and the film's comic timing. Like, the film is beautifully edited with the jokes and the payoffs delivered both visually and orally all over the place at just the most perfect timing.
Yeah.
It's really extra impressive when the editors got that comic timing
The visual there, I feel like that's a movie that you can watch multiple times because there are going to be a lot of visual gags.
Absolutely.
And I thought, like, you know what it reminded me of? The bit in Avengers when it's you know, the Hulk grabs Loki. Loki's trying to negotiate with Hulk. He's like, I'm going to, you know, you have no idea who I am. And then the Hulk just grabs him, just whams him back and forth.
Crowd pleasing, unexpected.
Right. And they clearly took that aesthetic and kind of, it still feels like a comic book movie in a very good way. And it was a lovely film.
According to John Knoll, one of the hardest shots to film in Avengers.
The Loki. The
smashing Loki Hulk. Around.
I can imagine, because if you do it the wrong way, it looks like a goofy ragdoll in bad 2000s animation.
Really hard. The two hardest shots, apparently, were that one and Hulk
punching.
Turning into the Hulk and punching the thing, the big dragon thing.
Oh, like jumping
out. I'm always angry.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That slow transition.
And it's so perfectly done.
It's wonderful.
Easy to not realize how all the choices, hundreds and hundreds of choices of how you're going to make that moment clear visually so that the audience is just totally on board. Because you're in a climax. You don't have time to lay groundwork. But that just has to be done. It's beautiful.
But it's what, like a three or four 3 or 4 second transition. Yeah. It's long, so it's 60 frames.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
There's a lot of storytelling to do in a very short period of time.
One of the things that Guardians of the Galaxy, in the comic books, I mean, it's not a very well-known comic book, so it's tough to bring that to screen, but they could take some liberties. And from a filmmaking perspective, James Gunn, who directed it, brought the music to the screen that's not in the comics and used the soundtrack in a way that's tied to the story, while also then being a soundtrack, not a score, but a soundtrack.
I mean, the music's all diegetic. So it comes from within the scene.
Right.
Yes.
Nice word. I didn't know that word.
I listened to film podcasts sometimes.
and it's not artificial. It's integral to the plot.
And so what is the name of the thing that they're, the stone?
It's another Infinity Stone. It's the same as the thing from Loki's.
It's the same as the Tesseract. I didn't realize that until after I saw the film.
I had to go look it up on the internet.
I think they should tie it into the Arkenstone and bring the Hobbit universe in.
The Hobbit, it could be one of the other planets of Midgard.
There you go.
Wait, you're saying all these Marvel movies are connected in some important way?
That's what they call it, an Infinity Stone?
Infinity Stone.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you tell me, so I want to talk about Vin Diesel, because I like Vin Diesel a lot.
And Groot is a beautiful character.
Did they motion cap Vin Diesel to do Groot, or is he just animated and voiced?
Just voiced.
Okay.
Just voiced.
Yeah.
I mean, he
was brought in relatively late in production to the.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he has one line over and over again, but the delivery on that line.
He has two lines.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
It's spoiler cast. Wow. So
it's a spoiler cast.
We are Groot.
Oh, yeah, we are Groot.
You recorded all those lines, and apparently all the Groot dialogue for other languages. the localization.
Oh, nice.
So
that's good.
It's Vin Diesel's voice.
Oh,
Miester Groot.
That's good. You know, I remember seeing this thing where Eddie Izzard complained that he spent all this, he was going to do a bunch of shows in France. And so he worked very hard on his Sean Connery impression speaking French, only to realize that French people have never heard Sean Connery speak. Mm. So speaking French as Sean Connery, just no fun at all.
Well, it's hard. Like, that's a tough character. He has one line, yeah, right? And this was like you, they delivered the line both with comedic, it was used for comedic and dramatic. And
so, a trivia question, this is not the first animated character Vin Diesel has played.
Iron Giant.
There you go.
Very similar.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. He's okay. Like the go-to guy for that thing, apparently.
He's the one-line specialist.
So what I want, there's already two runs of the of a dancing Groot, not dancing, but a static baby Groot from the RPF. In addition to a animated GIF, which is very sweet, and there's a toy of a dancing Groot, but it's fat and it doesn't look that mm-hmm. great. I want a good one.
You want a Groot?
I want a Groot.
It's almost like we need that. What was that? Well, dancing robot, the yellow one.
Yeah. So I was thinking that you could do it where it was flexible material, and you put a sort of a bent rod on a motor, a slow motor, so that as the rod moved, he'd kind of do his thing.
We saw somebody who had done a 3D printed a mechanism to curl, and you could put those in tentacle, and you yank, you pull tension on a cord that runs through the edges, and you could do multiples of those to weave it back and forth.
I assure you, toy companies are working on it right now.
I hope that is, so. That is I want a good thing. One.
Yeah, the good one might be up in the air, but that's coming out of that. The merchandising opportunities are endless. Endless. I don't know how many Star-Lord helmets we'll see this Halloween.
That's funny. Like, that was the one. The Star-Lord costume is the one thing I found less interesting. I his costume was like, of course, there's a lot of people in the RPF making Star-Lord costumes. That long leather jacket, the mm-hmm. short leather jacket, the rocket boots, the mask, mm-hmm. His man purse thing.
Merce, I think Merce. Is the technical word.
I just didn't think it just didn't capture me like like a classic piece of costume like Han Solo's uniform did.
I think it was designed to evoke.
Of course, I'm holding it up to a very high standard.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man.
Well, you're just gonna paint your body green, and you can be Drax.
I can be Zoe Saldana
or Drax.
Oh, Drax! There you go.
Oof.
So, if you're one of the like seven people listening to this who hasn't seen Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, now,
we should have said this at the beginning.
Yeah, you really should have told us at the beginning. Yeah. Otherwise, we still would have said everything.
The movie, it's still worth watching.
It's still totally worth watching.
Yeah. I mean, did you all see it in 3D? You saw it in both 3D and 2D. Does 3D matter?
Doesn't matter.
Because it's going to be in the cheapest theaters right now.
3D. And it was like, yeah, it doesn't matter at
3D,
all.
3D, yeah.
It's fat. It's going away for the seventh time.
Well, as long as they can sell the movie tickets for $18 instead of $10, then, it'll continue to be around. I think that'll do it for
us. I think that's a reasonable place to leave this. Chris Pratt, by the way, full marks for moving from comedy television guy to movie hero. He really, he's a fantastic Star Wars.
I never would have expected that, but he plays it. I mean, it's right up there with Robert Downey Jr. and as Iron Man, as unexpected characters.
Likeable.
The whole cast, just absolutely stunning, but he is a terrific one to lead it and really unexpected choice, I think.
It's at the end of that movie, I told Gina, it's the same thing that happened at the end of the first of the Star Wars reboot, J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek movie, where I saw it and I wanted to see what the adventures, I want to see those adventures.
Yes.
I want to see them every week on TV. Yeah. I want to be entertained on a more regular basis than every other year.
Chris Pine really owned Kirk, didn't he?
So did Zachary Quinto.
Yeah.
We should watch that. We need to do more. Ruining the Movie.
Comedy. Yes.
So let's.
I could do that on Sunday if you wanted. Let's talk about when we can do it.
Yeah, let's have some scheduling time. Let's do that right now. It's a great time.
On the podcast.
If you like to hear more schedule talk, leave us positive notes on iTunes or YouTube, and we'll make sure that happens.
And we promise we won't talk about schedule while you're listening.
It's 995 beats, guys. We got to go.
Excellent.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.